Throw another log on the fire for now. Grab a hot cider and gather around the radio for a trip back to Christmas 1960. Current State brings you a preview of a newly rediscovered reading of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. This is from the WKAR staff of 55 years ago. The complete hour-long performance comes your way this Sunday night at 8 o'clock and again on Christmas Eve at 7 p.m. You'll recognize the first voice on the show as longtime AM 870 radio reader host Dick Estell.
Marley was dead to begin with. There's no doubt about that at all. The register of his burial was signed by the clergyman, the clerk, and the undertaker, and the chief mourner. Scrooge himself signed it, and Scrooge's name was good on anything he chose to put his hand to. Scrooge and Marley were partners for I don't know how many years. Scrooge was his sole executor, his sole administrator, his sole friend, and his sole mourner. And even Scrooge was not so badly caught up by the sad event, but that he was an excellent man of business on the very day of the funeral, and solemnized it with an undoubted good bargain. Scrooge never painted out old Marley's name. There it stood years afterwards above the warehouse door, Scrooge and Marley. The firm was known as Scrooge and Marley. Sometimes people new to the business called Scrooge Scrooge and sometimes Marley, but he answered to both names. It was all the same to him. Oh, but he was a tight-fisted hand at the grindstone, Scrooge. A squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching old sinner. The cold within him froze his old features, nipped his pointed nose, shriveled his cheeks, stiffened his gait, made his eyes red, his thin lips blue, and spoke out shrewdly in his grating voice. He carried his own low temperature always with him. He iced his office in the dog days and didn't thaw it out 1 degree at Christmas. Nobody ever stopped him in the street to say with gladsome looks, "My dear Scrooge, how are you? When will you come to see me?" No beggars implored him to bestow a trifle. No children asked him what time it was. No man or woman ever once in all his life inquired the way to such and such a place of Scrooge. But what did Scrooge care? It was the very thing he liked, to edge his way along the crowded paths of life, warning all human sympathy to keep its distance. Michigan State University Radio presents A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. Once upon a Christmas Eve, old Ebenezer Scrooge sat busy in his counting house. It was cold, bleak, biting weather, and he could hear the people outside stamping their feet upon the pavement stones to warm them as they passed by. The door of Scrooge's counting house was open that he might keep his eye upon his clerk, who sat in a dismal little cell beyond, copying letters. Scrooge had a very small fire, but the clerk's fire was so very much smaller that it looked like one coal. But he couldn't replenish it, for Scrooge kept the coal box in his own room, and as surely as the clerk would come in with the shovel, the master would predict that it might be necessary for them to part soon. So the poor clerk would put on an extra coat and try to warm himself at the candle, and of course, failed.
Merry Christmas, Uncle Scrooge. God save you.
Bah, humbug.
Oh, Christmas a humbug, Uncle? You don't mean that, I'm sure.
I do, nephew. Merry Christmas, indeed! What right have you to be merry, Fred? What reason have you to be merry? You're poor enough.
Well, come then. What right have you to be dismal? What reason have you to be morose? You're rich enough.
Bah! Humbug!
Now, don't be cross, Uncle.
What else can I be when I live in such a world of fools as this? Merry Christmas! What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year older, but not an hour richer. If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart.
Oh, Uncle!
Nephew! Keep Christmas in your own way and let me keep it in mine.
Keep it? But you don't keep it.
Let me leave it alone, then. Much good may it do you. Much good it has ever done you.
Well, there are many things from which I might have derived good, by which I haven't profited, I dare say. Christmas among the rest. But I'm sure I've always thought of Christmas time as the only time in the long calendar of the year when men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely and to think of people around them as if they were really fellow passengers to the grave and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. And even though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe it's done me good and will do me good. And I say God bless it.
Bravo, Fred!
Let me hear another sound from you, Cratchit, and you'll keep your Christmas by losing your job. You are quite a powerful speaker, Mr. Fred. I wonder you don't go into Parliament.
Now, don't be angry, Uncle. Come dine with us tomorrow.
I'll see you in hell.
Oh, come now, Uncle. Why so sour?
Good afternoon.
I want nothing from you. I ask nothing of you. Why can't we be friends?
Good afternoon.
Well, I'm sorry with all my heart to find you so determined. We've never had any quarrel to which I've been a party. But I've made the effort in homage to Christmas, and I'll keep my Christmas humor to the last. So, a Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Good afternoon.
And a Happy New Year.
Good afternoon! Christmas, bah, humbug, holly, folly.
How do you do? Scrooge and Marley's, I believe. Have I the pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?
Mr. Marley has been dead these 7 years. He died 7 years ago.
Oh,
this very night.
We have no doubt his benevolence is well preserved by his surviving partner. Mr. Scrooge, at this festive season of the year, we should attempt to make some provision for the poor and destitute. Many thousands are in want of bare necessities. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comfort, sir.
Are there no prisons?
Plenty of prisons.
And the workhouses? Are they still in operation?
They are. Still, I wish I could say they were not.
The poor law is still in full effect, isn't it?
Yes, sir, and very busy, too.
Oh, I was afraid from what you said at first that something had occurred to stop them in their useful course. I'm very glad to hear it.
But since they scarcely furnish any Christian peace of mind or body, a few of us are endeavoring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. We chose this time of all others because it's a time of goodwill and abundance. What shall I put you down for?
Nothing!
You wish to be anonymous?
I wish to be left alone. Since you ask me what I wish, sir, that is my answer. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the establishments I have mentioned. They cost enough, and those who are badly off must go there.
Many can't go there, and many would rather die.
If they would rather die, they had better do it and decrease the surplus population. It's enough for a man to understand his own business and not to interfere with other people's. Mine occupies me constantly. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Lord, rest ye merry, gentlemen, let nothing you dismay.
An excerpt from a 1960 recording of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, performed by the staff of WKAR, and again, the complete hour-long performance comes your way this Sunday night at 8 o'clock and Christmas Eve at 7 o'clock.
Comfort and joy, comfort and joy.